Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Friends with Money podcast. My name is Michelle Baltazar. I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're talking about busting money myths. And here to speak about that is Jess Irvine, author of Money with Jess. Jess, thanks for jumping on board with us today.
Hi, Michelle. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. So I have read your book. I love it. I love the look of it. I put it in my handbag. I go to it like once a day because you have some useful tips here. And I recommend that our listeners check it out. It's Money with Jess. So let's get straight into it. You have 7 money myths there in the book, but I want to focus on 3. And I just want you to quickly share with our readers why you think that is. So number 1, money is too complex to understand.
Yeah, this is a big one. People get so overwhelmed. And I'm not sure if your readers are at a higher level of understanding of money than most people. But I just find in my work as a journalist and when I talk to people about money, people just get stuck in this sense of being overwhelmed. I think they hear about cryptocurrencies and quantitative easing and they get sort of bamboozled into thinking that money is this complex thing for men in suits in the finance world to figure out, and it's not something that's applicable to their daily lives or that they could ever understand. So, I mean, I just come at it with saying to people, you know, just acknowledge if you've got that feeling, if you've got that thought about money, that's going to produce a really horrible feeling in you that you just don't even want to look at money. It's too complex. I've been a journalist for almost 20 years now, writing about finance, and I can tell you that money is simply just a means of exchange. So you give up your time and labor and you go to work and you get money, and then you take that money and you exchange it for all the goods and services that you need and want to purchase in your life. And then at some point, you've got to sort of make sure that you earn enough of the money to buy all of the things that you want for your whole life. So setting aside a little bit for when you're retired and you're no longer able to work or you don't want to. And it's really as simple as that. Get the money, spend the money. It's a hard thing to run over a lifetime because you're doing your sums and trying to figure out how much money you will need. But just for people not to overcomplicate money too much, you know, and to start to feel some more positive feelings towards money. So to have it, to replace that thought with something like, you know, it's really pretty simple. I've just got to earn enough money to fund my lifetime consumption needs, and baby steps, I can do that small amounts at a time and not get too overwhelmed.
I love it. I love how you've kind of couch it as you should start developing positive feelings about money. It is an enabler of good things. It allows you to buy food. It allows you to provide for your family, whether it's education, your school fees, etc. And I will say, and I am not hating on the investment management sector, you do need a little bit of brains to kind of invest and find out all the complex bits. But I do believe that it is kind of intimidating, but unnecessarily so. If you break it down to how you've done it, that is exactly what it is. Money is just a tool for you to kind of get what you want and live your life.
Yeah, and people work so hard. You know, we spend so much of our lives working to get the money. I'm sort of like, let's look after the money. Let's nurture and care for it and pay attention to it and not shun it and put it in the corner and be scared to look at your bank statements. You know, when you're spending your money, be really deliberate and turn your attention and your focus onto it rather than it being something that you're overwhelmed by, because then you're most likely to make the poor spending decisions because you're acting out of a place of fear.
Yes, yes. So don't be fearful. Money is a good thing. And coming from a place where I have had a period in my life where I did not want to look at my bank statements. So, you know, hello, goodbye, my 20s. What's worked for me in the past is to start from just one thing. Don't feel like you have to accomplish something in an hour. So if you're just looking at your bank statement, maybe that's the goal, just to look at the bank statement and no judgment, right? Because you're starting to judge your spending profile, for example. So that's what's worked for me. What's worked for you? So how do you kind of have a more positive attitude towards money and your bank statements?
Yeah, look, so I do track my spending, and I've got a weird thing that I do where I track everything on paper with pen and a system of highlighters to categorize spending, which I designed and which I talk about in the book. And for me, you're so right. It's just baby steps. If you are someone who's really intimidated by money, just to sort of have a practice, I write down on a sheet of paper a printout that I designed and that's on my website that people can get if they want. You know, and I just go, you know, went to Macca's, $16. Was it essential? Yes, no. You know, the next, I went to the cinema, how much did it cost? And it's sort of, and I only do it about once a week or so. I check my account for the transactions, and then yes, I color coordinate and I highlight.
I love highlighters. I have post-it notes and highlighters, and Kiki K fan, you know, maybe that's just me.
It's the one area of my budget which tends to blow out because I love buying stationery. but I just say for people, and people think, gosh, that's too simple. It can't be as simple as that. You know, I've got to go invest and I've got to get a brokerage account, and people get all sort of up in their heads about where to start. And I just say, get really simple. It's okay to just track your spending, and it's very necessary. Intelligent, well-educated people are doing this. It's not sort of Mickey Mouse stuff. It's actually the foundation of knowing where your money is going and having some practice, whether you like Excel spreadsheets or paper, for just observing your money and seeing where it's going and making sure that you're not spending more of it than you've got coming in. It's really as simple as that.
Excellent. And I know that for people who do love apps, maybe apps work for them. And again, for other people, paper-based would work for them. All right. Myth number two. Some people are just bad at money.
Or just like not interested in it. It's not for them. Yeah, I see a lot of people just sort of thinking, I'm not good with numbers, you know. And I'd say to people, do you know what 10 minus 8 is? It's 2, spoiler alert. If you can do simple maths, you can do budgeting and you can make sure that you're living in a surplus. You know, it really can be as simple as that. And people, you know, come at it with an attitude of sometimes, you know, I'd rather be doing other things, or I'm just not a person who's switched on with money. And I just, you know, when you go to the psychology and when you sort of look at that side of things, you know, we do know that people can improve their skills. And it's kind of why we praise children for effort, not, you know, you're so good at maths, but I really love the way that you're trying to learn about maths and spending time, you know, practicing on that. Human beings can evolve their skill sets and you can get better at something. You just have to try and put in that little bit of effort to be in with your budgeting. You know, try to track your spending and you will get more confident with it and you will grow your abilities. And also, some of us, all of us are a little bit crap at money, in, to the extent that we're all humans and we all want to spend lots of money and we don't want to have to do the horrible work you have to do to get it, you know. And we all have these sort of thinking problems where we discount the value of having money tomorrow versus having it today. Yes. You know, we have these sort of quirks of our brains that we do have to fight against, you know, to make good decisions when it comes to money. But guess what? Those things are shared by everybody. And you're a finance expert, you know, and I know that you like to share about, you know, you can make mistakes too. You know, we can buy things we don't really value, or, you know, not pay attention to our money and not be having a saving strategy. It's something that's common to all of us, and we can all improve.
But we must acknowledge here, though, that some companies are really good at making us feel that we're not good with numbers. Like if you look at your normal gas bill and suddenly things are in, I can't even remember, like, you know, how much water you use this month. And it's like, why can't you just tell me that I spent $5 on water this week? They have to say, you know, you have to divide this number by this number. And it becomes like, oh, look, I'm just going to pay the bill. So there's a lot of that as well, I think. And I think we need to acknowledge that it is a literacy issue. And nationally, our mathematical skills do need improving. So if you feel like you're bad with money, it may be because you weren't trained to look at money in the same way that you were trained to do what you do as a job. So you might be a fantastic plumber, but you don't understand superannuation. Why is that? Because you were never educated about superannuation. So to me, when you were talking about this, about being bad at money, I was also reflecting at the habits that I've inherited from my mom and dad. The way they spend money turned out to be exactly the same way I spend money, which is terrible. You know, there might be, and I have friends who have fantastic money habits, and I find out that, oh no, my mom and dad do this all the time. So you can inherit good habits and also bad habits, you think?
For sure. And my message for people, I'm always at risk of sort of sounding a little bit, you know, boosterism, you can do it, come on, because I like to encourage people to pay attention to their money. But I also do recognize that we live in a much more complex financial world than even our parents did. You know, superannuation is something that, you know, is compulsory for all, and we've got to be good stewards of that money. You know, we're forced, if you're a high income earner, to get private health insurance and navigate the complexities of that. You know, students have student debts that, you know, weren't there for previous generations, and making decisions about whether to pay it off or do other strategies. I do think the world is more complex, you know, than it used to be. And you're so right that what you see at home can be the money habits and the attitudes that you take forward as an adult. So, you know, without sort of, you know, ignoring that context of what you've been taught matters, and also the world is quite complex, still trying to empower people to say, well, the simplest thing you can do is to make sure that you have a budget and you're tracking your spending and you've got a surplus to, you know, put into super or deploy in other ways. I'm trying to sort of take it back to the basics for people. And maybe if that's something you missed as a kid, to go, ah, this is how I should manage my money. I should have a budget. I should be paying attention to where my money is going and spending in alignment with my values. I hope that the book is sort of a beginner's guide. Perhaps if you missed the original growing up, it's never too late to learn some of those basics.
And you talked about the complexities right now. I mean, you know, how many bills do you get each month? It's a full-time job just trying to stay on top of those. But conversely, investing is a lot easier now. Like when 20 years ago, you couldn't buy shares for $100 or $20. But now you can. So what's worked for me as well is choice. You can choose to be bad at money forever, or you can do it the Jess Irvine way and actually work towards improving those, right? I mean, you've detailed how you can be good with, you know, groceries or your healthcare and so on and so forth.
And just taking it back to having a budget, but that being a and when I say budget, I actually don't mean sort of set a bunch of arbitrary spending limits and then beat yourself around the head when you miss them or when you spend more. I just mean like federal treasurers produce a statement at the start of the financial year, and they predict how much I think the revenue is going to be and the expenditure and whether we're in a surplus. And I just think for people knowing whether for their household, if that's the case, if they are actually producing a surplus, and then you can make the decisions about how to invest it, et cetera. But that just being a central discipline to start with, that is a good thing for everybody to do. I'm trying to really encourage people to just give it a crack.
Give it a crack. That's it. All right. Final myth that we're going to discuss today is I'm not supposed to spend money because that's bad.
I know. People, I think they get so much guilt when they buy things. And I do think there's a lot of people spending money on things that don't actually bring them real pleasure. And I think you're more likely to be that sort of person if you're sort of stuck in a head in the sand, I shouldn't be spending money, I shouldn't get haircuts or buy new shoes or take holidays that I want to have. Yeah, people have this really strange relationship thinking I'm bad for spending money. And I take it back to the economics, and economists spend a lot of time studying consumption, and they actually think it's the point of life is to be here and to consume things that you want and that you need. That's we're here to enjoy things. We're here to earn the money and then exchange it for the good things that we want. Unfortunately, we can't have everything that we want. So spending beyond a certain amount, you might need to be reining that in. But an important thing for me has been giving myself permission to spend in certain areas. So I have a part of my budgeting system, which is about establishing future funds, which are basically sinking funds where I say, this year, my holiday budget is $6,000, and that's what it is. And, you know, I'm planning several trips. And then when you say, yeah, you should spend money on holidays, you should spend money on clothing yourself, you should spend money on eating out with friends, just not too much money or money that's beyond your means.
It has to be intentional.
Yes. Right? And then when you do spend money that you have specifically and ahead of time set aside for that purpose, you can spend money without the guilt of and worry of thinking, can I actually afford it? So I really encourage people to think of the things they want to spend money on and then just try to anticipate how much you might want to be setting aside regularly as a savings to cover that. And we're here to enjoy life, and that involves spending money.
It's like your relationship with food, right? You have to have a healthy relationship with food. You should have a healthy relationship with money, spending and saving. So it's not just one or the other. So I think we should end this podcast. I'm afraid we've ran out of time, but I still want to squeeze one last thing, and that is a lightning round with Jess on how to save money on groceries. So you've got 30 seconds, Jess, on how can we save on our grocery bills. Go.
A list of 30 tips in the book. Let's go through it. Cook at home as much as possible with minimally processed original ingredients. Avoid food wastage. Don't buy things that you're not actually going to eat and put in the fridge, put in the bin. One of the best ways to do that is to make friends with your freezer. So if something's about to go off, chuck it in the freezer. Know the difference between use by and best before dates. If it's best before, it might still be okay to eat. Give it a smell. Shop your pantry first. If you do go shopping, always have a list. Make sure that you do use up the fruit and veg. I actually pulled out the crisper drawer in my fridge and put the fruit and veg you want to eat out on the bench or on the top shelf so that you eat it. Go meatless. You can bulk out some of your recipes with legumes. How am I going? Roast trays of vegetables on a Sunday and eat. Sunday should be meal prep day. Make food in bulk, whack it in the freezer again and take it to work with you. Grow your own vegetables if you can. When you go shopping, switch to home brands. We live in a high income first world country, and that stuff is just as good as the more expensive products, and we're out. Is that 30 seconds? The other ones, yeah, I think that's about it. It's trying to cook at home and become a chef, you know, can be one of the best things you can do for your household finances so that you're not ordering Uber Eats all the time. And just focusing on buying the raw ingredients and you're essentially not paying for the labor involved in transforming those raw ingredients into food. You do that and you save money.
Excellent, excellent. Well, as they say, food is the way to a man's heart or something along those lines. Clearly, I'm not a chef, but hopefully this does not affect my relationship because now you're asking me to cook.
You know, people think, oh, that's not about budgeting. Food is the second biggest expense for most Australian household budgets after housing. It goes housing, food, then transport. So if you're going to focus on one area where you can really save in the months ahead, have a look at your food spending and just start tracking it and see what you can do.
Fantastic. I shall make a note of that. But I can relate, because you just go to Aldi, you buy salmon, and suddenly you're at a 4-star restaurant at home because you're having salmon and some veggies. Unfortunately, we ran out of time, but we'd love to have you back, Jess. It's been great chatting with you.
I'd love that. I'm a big fan of the magazine, so keep up the great work.
Woohoo! Well, before we go, don't forget that if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions, comments, or even topics. If you want to ask Jess any questions, or you want us to do another episode around budgeting, do email us on podcast@moneymag.com.au. And finally, make sure you head over to moneymag.com.au for all the latest financial news and stories. We've got the extract of Jess's book in our August edition of Money Magazine. So that's it for this episode. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.